If people will please take your seats, we will start the meeting. And this is the April 24th meeting of the Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee. We have spent the majority of our year focusing on energy and utility issues, and we know that because we're a new committee and because we have a lot of freshmen and also a chair who has not sat on this committee before, we have a lot to learn about telecom, and we have learned a lot about energy and utilities this year. Next year will be a year to focus more on telecom issues. But I'd like to start out by having a hearing, first an overview of the issues, and then we have four bills that have some controversy in them, some more than others. And what I'd like to do is to give a presentation to those four bills and then ask the authors to have hearings or with stakeholders over the summer or over the interim to try to work out some of the controversy in the bills. Senator Wergen has one of the bills, and she has a very important meeting at 3:30 and has asked if she could present her bill first. So she is going to present her bill even before we do the overview. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want you to have my bill before you know what you're doing, just in case. How's that work? The bill is very, very simple. Senate File 671 came to me from actually a number of constituents, more than one. And actually, it's a personal interest to myself, too. My husband and I have chosen not to have cable or satellite TV because anytime you purchase something, you have to purchase a package. You can't select which channels or what types of things you want. For instance, you can't select Discovery Channel and History Channel and Family Channel, but not some of the others that are, in my mind and the minds of the people that brought me this bill, offensive. They come into your home as well. And so the folks are asking that when folks are selling satellite or cable services in Minnesota, that you be able to purchase separately just those channels that you wish to have in your home rather than being forced to always purchase an entire package. That's the sum total of the whole bill, to be able to pick which channels you want to see and pay for just those channels rather than a whole package that includes things that your family really wants no part of. And as I said, this came from several constituents in my district. And when they brought it, I thought, yeah, I like that idea a lot. So I decided to carry that. I realize that the committee's probably not in a position to put that through anywhere at this point in time. And I understand that your direction that you gave earlier about talking to stakeholders. So,
Senator Wergen, maybe what do you see as the obstacles in the bill?
I have to investigate further whether there are obstacles even on a federal level. That I really don't know. I frankly have not had enough time to put more effort into discovering what some of the obstacles are. I think the other obstacle is probably simply the companies in wanting to sell a package because of the way they get paid and the advantages that they have by carrying certain channels along with others. And so I think there will be obstacles both from the companies that offer these packages, and I don't know on a federal level if there's any trade issues or not that I have to discover myself.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments by committee members? Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Wergen, I would like to work with you on this bill if you need some help.
Well, thank you. And Senator Dahl and Madam Chair, I have been really surprised since I introduced this how many people must watch what you introduce and the number of emails I've gotten of people that are saying, go, Senator. So it is something I think that I do need to look at further. Work on the bill, and hopefully we can do something about it next year or whatever happens, because I have, you know, like I said, I have just been really amazed how many people have said we really want this.
Okay, and I would like to note for the record that a quorum has checked in, although we will not be taking any votes today. And the other thing is that we will not be taking any testimony today. And we would ask that if you have testimony you would like to have come before the committee, that you provide some written remarks. Anybody that's interested in this issue might contact Senator Wergen or Senator Dahl. And we appreciate your presentation, and we'll lay it over for work next year.
Thank you. And Senator Solon, there were several people that really would have liked to come to testify, so if we have something in the future or next year, I would probably have significant numbers in the room, but I told them that it was probably not a good thing today.
Yes, we will have an opportunity for live testimony before we do vote on the bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Now I'd like to go back to the beginning of the agenda and start by providing a little legislative history of telecom issues, and I've asked our Senate counsel, John Fuller, to do this for us.
Members, what I've actually done is prepared a couple of principles or concerns that influence decisions on telecommunications issues. It's a different legal situation than with electricity. So I picked three with electric regulation. One is federal involvement, the interplay between state and federal regulation. And there are a number of statutes in the federal area that regulate communications, and some of them speak expressly to preemption of state jurisdiction. In fact, I've just picked two for examples. One has to do with wireless regulation. We have a wireless bill before us today, consumer protection. It replaces the previous bill that was passed on this subject was ruled as preempted by the federal courts. And that was based on a section of the telecommunication law that says, in its two sentences, notwithstanding sections of this title, no state or local government shall have any authority to regulate the entry of or the rates charged by any commercial mobile service or any private mobile service, except that this paragraph shall not prohibit a state from regulating the other terms and conditions of commercial mobile service. And this was a provision that led the court to decide that our previous law was preempted. So there is that caution. With respect to the bill we just heard described in the federal cable law, there's a preemption provision that limits state jurisdiction that says no state or franchising authority may prohibit, condition, or restrict the cable system's use of any type of subscriber equipment or any transmission technology, nor impose requirements regarding the provision or content of cable services, the provision or content of cable services, except as expressly provided in this subchapter. And some argue that provision may limit our ability to do as this previous bill suggested. In addition, the Federal Communications Commission has just issued a ruling that limits, and they're going to propose some rules to implement it that limits local franchising authorities to regulate cable in a number of areas. That's the first issue that the committee should be thinking about is what jurisdiction does the state have and how has it been limited by federal law. Second one is this issue that I think is commonly referred to as cliche, level playing field. If you have involving of different technologies offering the same service, different providers of video service, and the concern of the industry is that no particular type of technology be advantaged or disadvantaged by regulation. So that's also a concern. You have competing technologies, and the concern is that they can compete in a way that's not impaired by the regulatory structure. And the third one is the evolution of competitive markets, and a bill was introduced today by a senator that I think is a good example of this. We've had monopolies that existed a lot in the telecommunications industry, and they were regulated by regulators. And when there's competition, the argument goes that the market should serve to some extent, if not entirely, as the regulator with respect to prices and services, that's a better and more efficient regulator. And so today, Senate File 2261, with respect to telecom regulation, with respect to business customers, under current law, there are certain competitive areas where the incumbent telephone companies can have a lighter regulation as they compete with less regulated competitors. And this bill would make it statewide, apparently make the decision that the whole state is subject to competition, and so competition would serve as the former PUC regulator. So those are the three, I think, three of maybe some more, but I think the three top sort of differences between the electric industry legal structure and telecom. One is the federal presence. Two is the different technologies. I mean, electricity, you have electrons. In telecom, you have a lot of different sort of technologies, so a level playing field. And then the fact that there is competition, the former monopoly markets are evolving, and so the former regulatory structure may be replaced by the market. And so those are, I think, three principles that you can think about as you assess the merits of the various proposals.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay. Next, we'll move into overview of telecom. And I've asked Ed Garvey, who's the Deputy Commissioner of Energy and Telecommunications for the Department of Commerce, to lead us through that. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner for Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. You see me often on the energy field, but it is another part of my division's purview is to do telecommunications. I've been doing telecommunications regulation for roughly about 10 years now. Six of those years on the Public Utilities Commission, three of those years as its chairman, and for the last four-plus years in this role. But more importantly, through all those years, I've had the very, very great service of Diane Wells, who is really my right-hand person on telecommunications and is here to handle all of your difficult questions. I will handle the softball easy questions, but she can handle the difficult questions. I think, members of the committee, Madam Chair, John Fuller basically gave a very, very good thumbnail sketch, and I will basically just take it just a smidge further and try to sort of telescope, if you will, 100 years of utility regulation into about 5 minutes. They've been accelerating. Before 1984, it was really a vertically integrated monopoly system. Ma Bell owned everything and operated everything and provided service in a monopoly setting and was regulated as a monopoly by public utilities commissions and to an extent the Federal Communications Service at the federal level. 1984, the long distance portions of Ma Bell was broken up. Competition was injected into that type of service, particularly within the context of Sprint, MCI, et cetera. At the local level, the Baby Bells preserved their monopoly, and they were continually regulated at the state level. Fast forward from then to about 1996, in which in 1995 in the state of Minnesota, 1996, when we concluded that regulation, monopoly regulation, wasn't the best way to go, a competitive approach was the way to go, and that we passed laws both at the state level in 95 and then in 96 at the federal level, which is the more important of the two, to basically break up the incumbent monopoly local telephone services, or the RBOCs as they're called, regional Bell operating companies, and provide competition. A lot of our time was spent in figuring out that regulatory regime and the relationship between competitors and US West / Quest. Spent a lot of time working on that. Fast forward to even more recently, you're starting to see more dramatic changes in technologies, more dramatic changes in business models, changes in consumer demands and expectations, changes in jurisdictional authorities between the state and the federal government, changes in regulatory regimes and requirements. And all that has put a very sort of significant stress on the regulatory system on how do you regulate it, who regulates it, what's the best way to regulate it. And what you're sort of seeing, what this committee is having before it, and the bills that you have before it, are a lot of those kinds of issues. Addressing the technologies, filling the gaps, trying to basically reduce the regulatory and oversight components, level the playing field, provide capabilities, provide consumer protection mechanisms. Those are all come into play, and you start seeing them over the course of the last 25 years from 1984, 96, and to the present. Landscape. There are about 90 incumbent local telephone carriers in the state of Minnesota. Incumbent local carriers, Quest is far and away the biggest, then there's Embark and Frontier, then you have sort of the little ones such as the smaller size ones, is Hickory Tech, sort of Mankato to Northern Telephone Company that serves the Wawena with exchanges, which is about 50 customers. So you have a large spectrum of incumbent telephone carriers. You have about 340 certified companies providing long distance in the state of Minnesota. From, of course, the big ones of AT&T, Sprint, Envoy, Quest, etc., all the way down to the very little niche players, 360 Networks, AceLink, Looking Glass Networks, etc. There are 175 competitive local exchange carriers. These are entities that can provide local dial tone service. They do need to be certified by the Public Utilities Commission. Some of them use their own facilities. Some of them rely on pieces of the incumbent's network, and some of them just completely resell on a retail basis from the incumbent's network. Different business models serving different types of services. All these members that I've talked about, the incumbents, the CLECs, the long-distance carriers, need regulatory approval for certification, just certification. Wireless providers, cable operators, as cable operators, and VoIP providers and other kinds of services like that do not require any state regulatory certification and authority. And Madam Chair, I mean, the two biggest issues that we then are that are confronting us are your counsel John Fuller talked about is the uneven playing field between the various technologies and managing the consumer protection mechanisms that how these entities deal with each other, in the milieu of a changing regulatory framework where many of these issues are going to the federal level and away from the state level for national regulatory regime. And then the third issue is infrastructure and the desire to roll out or provide additional services or expanded services, and this is a high-speed DSL. I mean, so in a very quick nutshell, that's a lay of the issues. It's a lay of the sort of the regulatory framework and a sort of a taste of how complicated and nuanced and evolving these things are. And it's appropriate, Madam Chair, that you use this hearing to sort of wet the committee's whistle on this issue, and then use the interim to actually sort of delve deep, because they are very, very complicated. There are a lot of different perspectives from a lot of different players, each of them coming at it with their own perspective. And our balance as regulators, your challenge as policymakers, is preserving what we need to do, and that is preserving dial tone and connectivity, at the same time managing and improving the systems, because the consumers are expecting more from their communication systems. Madam Chair, that sort of concludes my very brief overview. I hope that sort of comports with your time expectations. Do I need to?
I'm rather puzzled, and I'm wondering if it seems there's a lot more we can't do than we can do, in terms of regulation. And I'm just wondering if there are areas that haven't been regulated or that that we could enter into, or are there actual laws that prohibit us from regulating some areas? That's, I know that's pretty broad question.
It's a very important and substantive question, which is why I'll ask as well as to try to address it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as you get into the new technologies.
Please just identify yourself for the record.
Diane Wells from the Department of Commerce.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there have been certain areas that have, the state level has been excluded from regulating. For example, in the wireless area, the FCC has, and federal laws have prohibited the states from regulating the rates that are charged. But the consumer protection areas are more open. Cable is franchised at the local level, and a few states regulate at the state level now because they've passed legislation to grant statewide certificates or franchising authorities. Broadband has been deemed by the FCC to be an information service, so it isn't a telecommunications service. And although Quest, for example, has offered DSL for years in Minnesota, and the cable companies have cable modems, the State Commission has never regulated the rates or the service quality for those services. So there are federal prohibitions on what you can do.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions or comments by committee members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olsen.
I don't understand that last mile stuff, you know, where they talk about the last mile and convert from using somebody else's lines and then going with maybe their own or...
Ms. Wells.
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, the last mile is the most expensive part of the network to complete because you can get out to the town or the neighborhood, but then you have to run for landline service, you have to run a line to each individual home, and so that's the most expensive part of the network to reach every individual customer. And so a lot of companies, their business model is to build into the incumbent telephone company's central office or to build out to the neighborhood node and then to purchase the loop from that point on and from the incumbent provider.
I didn't understand a word you said.
Senator Olsen. Well, we have a long ways to go yet, Senator Olsen.
Madam
It'll be a while before we're at that last mile. Mr. Garvey.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Members of the committee, Senator Olsen. The whole concept of the wireline setup is the wire from a series of switches and connect you to the system out to the actual pick up the phone. As you run out that network, the more you get out, the more spread out the network is. And so at the individual home to individual home to individual home is that proverbial last mile. And that's expensive to put that wire. So what the business model is to sort of run it out to a spoke-like spot, referred to generally as the node, and then purchase from the person who owns the wire to the actual residential phone the use of that wire. And that's the last mile. And making that connection is what's been sort of very hard. If you're getting it to the hub doesn't matter if you can't get out to the spokes, because otherwise there's no one that can connect to you, and you know you have no customer. So you have to get out to that individual phone, and that's where a lot of these discussions go: is how do you get access from the hub out to the spokes? And that's the proverbial last mile discussion. Now it gets a lot more complicated. But that's sort of the battle. That's why a lot of folks like to run direct out and be in control of their customer. They don't want to have to buy, but can they afford it? Can they run it out to those customers? And that's an infrastructure installation question.
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Deputy Commissioner Garvey, is there a difference in the regulation by the mechanism with which a signal is transmitted? For instance, I would imagine the satellites are one under one set of regulations, but how about cable versus fiber versus wireless?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Carlson. I mean, you've hit on both the strength and the weakness, if you will, Senator, of the regulatory regime. The regulation over the decades have been on a technology-by-technology basis. And along those technologies were jurisdictional lines that were developed. And so the answer is very much so. There's very different sets of regulatory regimes depending upon the technology. That regime, those regulatory regimes, those pillars of regulation worked well long as the technology stayed serving their original design. But as legal counsel Fuller indicated, as we all know, those capabilities of those technologies are blurring across the technologies. You're seeing wireless being able to provide video. You're seeing copper wire providing, you know, video. You're seeing cable, coaxial cable, now providing telephony services. And you start seeing those, and those become the blur. You're seeing high speed provide a lot of that stuff. Now, high speed in one setting triggers one set of regulatory regimes. High speed in another, a different one. And rationalizing those becomes, you know, a significant public policy challenge.
Madam Chair,
Senator Carlson,
Mr. Garvey, again, what John was saying was the level playing field where no regulatory, I believe, I'm not sure if you said regulatory options or no regulations would give one the inherent advantage over the other. Have we reached the end of that ability?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Carlson, I'm not completely sure. I mean, the end of the ability. I mean, I don't understand. Could you go on? Because I think I understand, but I want to be clear what you're asking.
The end of the ability to keep that playing field level.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, what the complaint is the opposite, is that an entity that is regulated regulated in one way, but a competing technology providing the same service is regulated differently. And so what they're asking for is a leveling across the technologies of the regulatory regime. And so that is not necessarily an ability. It's a how do you actually try to do that in a fair and equitable way without disadvantaging the technology, given at the same time not penalizing a technology in that leveling, at the same time understanding the jurisdictional differences. I mean, in fact, and I'll just sort of take the liberty to say, I mean, I think the future ultimately is what I refer to as an information communication and entertainment delivery system approach, that it's about the delivery system, and we want to cross the board. Now, this is there are a lot of people in the audience who have issues with that concept, and rightfully so, because it has its own set of issues. But it is one of those kinds of questions and how you manage those between the stovepipes of regulation, between the jurisdictional place. I rambled on a little bit, but I hope we got at least the gist of what I was.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We have three more bills to hear, and the first one is by Senator Mary Olson, and it's Senate File 833. And Senator Olson, before you got here, I mentioned that we are presenting the bills We're not taking any public testimony. We're asking people to present written testimony if they wish. And then we're asking the authors to hold stakeholder groups or try to work out the controversy over the interim and come back next session. At that time, we will take public testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does that mean that, though, that I have a witness here to present and walk you through the bill, that that will
be? No, that's fine, Senator Olson. Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very happy to be here this afternoon on behalf of Senate File 833. And before we begin, I do have a delete-all amendment that would put the bill in the form that I'd like to have it considered for discussion.
Okay. Senator Olson has a delete-all amendment, and Senator Dahl would...
I move the delete all amendment.
Okay, that's the. Does everybody have a copy yet?
I don't think if this is the first time it's heard.
I think I'll wait till it gets passed out. Is that okay for this? Actually, this is a House file amendment. But we'll correct it to Senate File 833.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, many of the more than 70% of Americans who now use cellular telephones have likely experienced a problem with their wireless service. The wireless industry ranks as one of the most complained about industries, according to the Better Business Bureau, ranking first in number of complaints to the Better Business Bureau in the last 3 or 4 years. I've been asked by the Attorney General's office to carry this bill to address this problem and also to address an issue that occurred when earlier legislation was overturned by the Eighth Circuit court system. And to explain the history of this and also the reason exactly what this bill does and to walk you through the bill, with me here today is Jessica Palmer Denig from the Attorney General's office.
Senator Olson, before we go any further, the House has heard the bill, and have they passed the bill?
My understanding is that the House has heard the bill and that it has been referred to the floor. It will be, it's expected to be passed on the floor with the adoption of the amendment that was considered by the committee, but apparently for technical reasons wasn't formally adopted, so that will be done on the floor.
Okay, so we'll continue to work off of the Senate file then. And let's go back to the amendment, and we will adopt your amendment so it's in the shape that the author wishes. Any questions or comments? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jessica Palmer Denig. I'm the manager of the Residential and Small Business Utilities Division with the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and to talk with you today about wireless consumer protection legislation. As Mr. Fuller alluded during his presentation, this bill is designed to replace a law that the legislature passed in 2004. It was called the Consumer Protections for Wireless Customers Act. It was authored in the House by now Senator Vandeveer and in the Senate by Senator Bachman. Its primary purpose was to prevent wireless carriers from raising the price of your wireless service or extending the contract without your consent. There were extensive hearings on the bill. Senator Anderson actually provided some testimony of her own experience with her wireless service, and it was ultimately passed with broad bipartisan support. It was challenged before it became effective by the wireless industry. It was ultimately struck down by the Eighth Circuit on the basis that a provision that required wireless carriers to wait for 60 days before they could raise the price of the contract was a rate freeze, so it constituted rate regulation. And as Mr. Fuller stated, states are preempted from regulating the rates that are charged by wireless carriers or their entry into the market, but we are permitted to adopt other terms and conditions regulations, such as consumer protection regulations. The AG's office appealed the Eighth Circuit decision to the United States Supreme Court, We were supported in that appeal by 36 other state attorneys general and six national consumer protection organizations like AARP and Consumers Union and the National Consumer Law Center, but ultimately the Supreme Court decided not to take the case, leaving in place the Eighth Circuit's decision to strike down the statute. Since 2004, there have been a number of developments that lead the Attorney General to believe that wireless consumer protection legislation is still needed to replace that statute that was never effective. For instance, the AG's office receives complaints about wireless service. Since 2004, we still get complaints about the same things that that 2004 legislation was supposed to cover. We also get complaints about coverage issues and charges by third parties on wireless bills. The Better Business Bureau, as Senator Olson said, ranks the wireless industry as the most complained about industry and has in three out of the last 4 years out of about 3,600 different industries. Wireless complaints lead the federal communication statistics. Consumer Reports has ranked wireless service as one of its perennial low scorers. Local media coverage has actually recently focused on issues with wireless service. The St. Paul Pioneer Press published an article on March 25th entitled, "Horror, Won't Someone Save Me from My Cell," detailing some consumer problems. This is not the only state legislature to be considering consumer protections for wireless customers. They're also pending in Connecticut, Maryland, New York, New Jersey, North Dakota, Oregon, and Pennsylvania currently. Senate File 833 is designed to offer wireless customers protections without getting into the problems that we encountered with the last statute, the rate regulation issues. The bill includes the prior statute's requirement that customers be given a copy of their contracts and requires wireless carriers to advise customers when a change in their contract, such as by adding extra minutes or by purchasing a new phone, when that will extend their contract, putting them into a new 2-year contract term. It also contains additional requirements requiring, for instance, clear disclosure of the price of the service, that customers be given an accurate coverage map, that there be information about early termination fees and if the wireless carrier can raise the price of your service during the term of the contract, and also that carriers list government-mandated taxes and charges separately on the bill from the prices for service, and that they specifically identify these government-mandated charges as opposed to things that the government simply permits them to pass through to customers. The bill also extends to wireless customers some protections that are already available to customers on their local telephone bills when there's a third-party charge that is unauthorized. If you see a third-party's charge on your local telephone bill and you haven't authorized it, you can call your local telephone provider and get some redress from that company, but you are not able to do that if the third-party charge appears instead on your wireless bill. This bill is designed to address the problems without being prohibitive on the wireless carriers. It is not at all the intent to interfere with them being able to be adaptive technologically to what the market would like. And during the course of the House hearings on this bill, we did make substantial changes resulting in this amendment, particularly to the third-party billing section, to make it easier for wireless carriers to continue to conduct that business via electronic message, internet, and by text message, which is most often how the third-party charges get on your wireless bill. Notwithstanding those changes, the wireless industry does not favor state regulation of its business. In conversations with the Attorney General's office and in the House hearings, they expressed concerns about being required to comply with different state regulations in different states, and they have also indicated that they don't believe that there is a substantial consumer protection problem. The AG, on the other hand, believes that the legislature had the right instinct in 2004 when it passed that legislation and so supports the legislation again today.
Any questions or comments by committee members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Neither Mrs. Palmer Denning or Senator Olson, probably better for Mrs. Palmer Denning. What would you say a majority of your complaints are on the contract extensions, that piece?
I would say that we have a lot of complaints about billing disputes. The contract extensions cycles in and out. There will be, and it's not consistent necessarily with one carrier all the time. We saw a lot of it with one particular carrier this year. We were seeing a lot of it a couple years ago with a different carrier. There is a consistent theme, though, that we continue to receive these complaints. I did some breakdown on statistics. And we did get, in 2006, 42 complaints from customers whose contracts were extended without notice. They were charged early termination fees. They're usually $150 to $200 per phone. So if you have a family plan, a husband and a wife and two children, and you all have phones, you could potentially be charged $800 to end your contract. And if that's a contract that you didn't know that you were in to begin with, that's a pretty hefty charge.
Madam Chair, well,
Senator
Sparks. And one more question. Can you help me understand a little bit more about those third-party charges mm-hmm. on a cell phone?
Sure.
Ms. Palmer, Denick.
Senator Prettner-Solin and committee members, there in recent years was a move by both landline local telephone providers and also cell phone providers to open up their bills as a platform for charges by other parties, not for the telephone service, but for other things. So, for instance, we've seen on your landline bills, you might encounter a charge for an unlimited directory assistance charge or something. If you sign up for some other service, it's usually related to your telephone service, but it's not actually provided by your telephone provider. We see this on wireless bills, particularly related to ringtones, joke of the day services, and other things that are provided via the cell phone. We also have had complaints about charges for roadside assistance plans being charged on cell phone bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Senator Olson.
And Madam Chair, I would just say from firsthand experience, and my guess is all of us probably have cell phones and have had either good or bad dealings with companies, but I can give personal testimony to experiences I've had with high school and college age children where we've added a phone to our family plan over the phone without signing anything, and then later attempted to discontinue use of that phone and were told that that phone was, we were required to continue maintain that additional number of phones, even though we weren't given any benefit, like a reduced price on the phone or something, when we initiated that additional service. And so I know, at least from my own personal experience, I've been subjected to these kinds of practices.
Any additional questions or comments? Okay, thank you. And we'll be laying this bill over then.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Senator Sparks, we're going to take your bill next, 2216.
First of all, I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for having this hearing today. I think as we're starting to understand, certainly with some of the newer members, that if you thought the energy stuff was tough, I think we're seeing that this is obviously another area of that we're going to have to do some work on. But I do want to take the opportunity to introduce Senate File 2216, known as the Video Competition Act. With this legislation, Minnesota has an opportunity to join a growing number of states, including our neighboring state of Iowa, to streamline the process of competitive entry into cable TV markets. Across the country, telephone companies are upgrading their networks with fiber optics to offer television and other video security services using Internet Protocol technology, also known as IPTV. This new technology will result in more investment in Minnesota's telecommunications infrastructure and higher speeds for consumers, not to mention more choices for consumers and more competition in the market. In bringing this legislation forward, I recognize there are different points of view on how we should proceed. I'm open to working with interested parties to craft a bill that is in the best interest of Minnesota consumers. I'm supportive of establishing a process over the interim to study the various options available. However, unlike some, I do believe that the best approach is not to do anything. My hope is that we can pass a bill next year that will get us in this direction. If we meet these objectives, consumers will benefit, and I think that's what this committee should focus on. With me today, Madam Chair, I do have the President of Qwest Communications, John Stanek, with me, and he can talk a little bit more about the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Stanek.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is John Stanek. I'm the President of Qwest Communications here in the state of Minnesota, and I appear on behalf today of our 4,400 employees in the state to indicate that we're supportive of this proposed legislation to reform Minnesota's video franchising law. I understand this is going to be an item of interim study, and we pledge to work with the author and the other interested parties to hopefully come back with some legislation that can be passed next year. I just want to make a couple of brief comments. First of all, this legislation, or some form of it, is passing and has been passed in a number of states around the country. Two states now have accomplished video franchise reform by administrative action. 10 states have passed laws that establish some form of statewide video franchising or video franchise reform. And two states have now passed legislation that is awaiting a governor's signature, most recently in the state of Georgia, and just last week in our neighboring state of Iowa. The legislature has passed legislation and sent it on to the governor for review in the state of Iowa. We believe that, as Senator Sparks indicated, that there are three main reasons to pass this type of legislation. One is to give consumers additional choice. Second is to bring the benefits of competition to consumers in the form of lower prices. The Federal Communications Commission has studied this issue and determined that since the Telecommunications Act of 1996, cable prices have gone up 93% and last year increased by over 5%. The FCC concludes that if there is wireline competition in local communities, prices are generally 17% lower than where no competition is present. The GAO has also looked at this issue and concluded that prices would be 15% lower. And recently in the state of Texas, where AT&T is now offering service, that's exactly been the experience there, where Charter Communications has lowered its prices. This also serves an important state goal. I know you're going to be hearing some commentary on a bill in a few moments that talks about a state broadband policy. This would incent providers to invest in fiber and broadband in the state of Minnesota. To the earlier question, the way this IPTV, Internet Protocol Television, would work is that companies like Qwest would put fiber into the neighborhood in that last mile using our existing copper infrastructure. In the lab, we are able to get speeds at up to 30 to 40 meg. So this would be a significant expansion of broadband capability in the state of Minnesota and something we look forward to. Finally, the provisions of the bill. Much was made earlier, and you heard some discussion about a level playing field. In our view, this is a level playing field that would allow telecommunications telephone companies to enter into the video business. When cable companies in this state wanted to enter into the phone business, they followed a set of rules that were established by the state that eased their entry into the marketplace. And what this bill does is take those very rules and that very scheme that allowed cable companies to come in and offer telephone services and flipped it over and said, those are the same rules we ought to use for telephone companies to offer video services. We don't think there is anything that could be more fair or more of a level playing field. In addition, the bill requires that if a cable company is paying a franchise fee to a city, and I'm sure many of you have heard from your cities about that, whatever the cable company is paying, the telephone company in providing video services would pay in the form of a video provider fee. Public education and governmental channels that are provided by a cable provider in a community would need to be provided by a video provider in a community. There is a complaint resolution process outlined in the bill that starts at the local level with an informal ability to try to resolve disputes. If that doesn't work, there is a process in the bill that allows for mediation, and inevitably, if that does not occur, an individual or a city could take an action in district court. There is a provision in the bill that makes it illegal to redline. Let's be clear about this. Redlining any type of provision of service or denial of service on the basis of matters such as income, race, and ethnicity is wrong. It is morally repulsive. It should not occur, and this bill makes clear it will not occur. There is not a build-out requirement in the bill for the reason being that the cable companies have a 30-year head start. They have all the customers. Companies that wish to come in and provide a competitive option have none. And just as they were not required to provide service to everyone when they entered into the phone world, we don't think it's appropriate the obligation run the other way. And finally, there is nothing in this bill that impairs in any way the rights of the city to manage their rights of way. And so those are the basic concepts of the bill. As I said in my opening comments, Madam Chair, we look forward to working with the author and the members of the committee as well as interested stakeholders on this proposed legislation to bring something back to you next year that will follow the national trend in this direction of video franchise reform.
Mr. Stanek, why do we need the bill? I mean, is there anything that prohibits you from doing what you want to do now?
Madam Chair and members, I think that the reason that statewide franchising authority is being sought is that in 30 years ago, when cable franchises were being granted, those were in essence de facto local monopolies. And there was a requirement that the cable companies went from city to city, and there was the imposition of things like a build-out requirement because it was felt to be important that at the local level, local elected officials be able to assure that everyone in a community was able to access services. That's indeed the same situation that was applied to telephone companies offering services in what's known as a universal service requirement or provider of last resort obligations. The theory being, if you have a government-issued monopoly or de facto monopoly, you should be required by the government to serve all customers. As things have evolved and cable companies are now providing video services, they don't have those obligations to serve all phone customers, and we don't believe it's appropriate that when a company is entering a market where it has 0 customers, 0% market share, that should be required at all. This technology is on the horizon. It's coming soon, and what we would like to do is to have a legal and regulatory environment in place in Minnesota such that when the technology is ready to go, this is a service we could bring to Minnesotans. This is a choice that we could give to them. I know that in some of the materials and comments that have been circulated, the comment has been made that Quest has not sought local franchises in the state of Minnesota. I can assure you that before you consider this legislation during the 2008 legislative session, we will seek local franchises in the state of Minnesota. But we still think a uniform state approach is appropriate, just as it was appropriate for the cable companies when they wanted to come into the phone business.
Senator Sharon.
I'll need to learn a lot more about this in time, but is that the essence that of what you're asking, is that it shift in a way that there's simply one statewide franchise rather than you going to the various municipalities to seek a franchise? Is that the essence of what this bill is about?
Madam Chair and Senator, at its core, that is probably the most important principle, to streamline the process of entry. Today, a cable company that wants to offer phone service files a form, a series of documents that are fairly straightforward, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. And in my experience, every company that has applied or has been given the authority to enter, we're seeking a similar streamlined process at the state level.
Mr. Stanek, do you have plans to offer video services here in Minnesota?
Madam Chair and members, at the current time, I don't think I can represent that the technology is ready for us to offer services. We're watching very carefully what AT&T is doing, where they have deployed the services, as I indicated. The ability to put fiber into the neighborhood, to utilize that last mile, we can lay the fiber, that those technologies are available. But it's very important that when this service is rolled out to consumers, that it be ready for prime time and it work. There are not immediate deployment plans to do that, but as I indicated, we are watching very closely, and when this technology is ready to go, when that investment is capable of being made, we want to make sure that the legal and regulatory environment is such that we could have rapid entry into the Minnesota market, giving consumers the choice.
What if it doesn't happen? I mean, what if you're ready and none of this ever happens?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my assumption would be there's very little harm in passing the legislation, because if no one is offering the service, the concerns that have been advanced by some who have indicated they're opposed to this approach would not be realized in any way.
Senator Sharon.
What will I hear from the local municipalities that right now have the authority to execute a franchise with you at each community level? What will they tell me is their loss, or are they supporting this? Or
Mr. Madam Chair, Stanek. Senator, I think it's at this time they are not supporting this legislation. I would not want to speak for them, but from having heard them testify in the House when there were a series of hearings on this proposed legislation this session, and from reading the materials that have been prepared in Minnesota, I think their concerns would be the loss of local control, having this go to the state rather than handled at the local unit of government. There have been concerns raised about whether they would have the right to manage the local right-of-way. As I indicated, I don't think that's implicated by this bill, so some further discussion actions can hopefully resolve that issue. I think they're concerned about the potential loss of revenue. As I indicated, we intend to pay the same type of fee that the cable companies are paying to the local unit of government. My thought would be with further discussion, we should be able to work through that issue. I think there are concerns about whether the public access channels will in fact be the same. We should be able to work through that issue. I think there are concerns about how disputes would get resolved. We have attempted to put in place a process that doesn't require people go directly to court, involves an informal dispute resolution at the local level, which would then escalate up into a mediated process and then could result in a district court action. I think we'll need to talk through the logistics of that. I would say, and then there are also issues related, your counsel informed you earlier, there have been some changes in this area that were recently adopted or mandated by the Federal Communications Commission. There are now rules being promulgated by the FCC. I think we're all looking at those rules to see what implications they're going to have for both local franchising as well as this type of legislation. The one issue, if I were to highlight one that I think is the most difficult to resolve, is that a number of municipal and cable access interests have articulated is that they believe that a provider who is not given, in essence, a de facto monopoly in the market should be required to serve all customers in a particular area. And that is one that simply when you're starting with a 30 years behind, you have 0% market share. The way we have invested, the way other companies are invested, and indeed the way the cable companies have rolled out their telephone deployment is to say you enter a market, you get customers, you hopefully get some revenues, and then you expand and grow from there. So of the issues, the one that I think I'm most skeptical of being able to resolve prior to next legislative session would be a mandated build-out requirement. But those, as I understand it, are some of the concerns that have been expressed by the municipalities and the cable commissions. There are undoubtedly more, and they would be in a better position to speak to those issues. But I think those are some of the major ones I've heard.
Mr. Stanek, I'm aware that, or I've been told, I actually am not familiar with it, but I've been told that there was legislation that passed in Iowa recently.
Correct.
That was embraced, well, maybe not embraced, but accepted by both the cable industry and the telephone industry. Are you familiar with that? And how does that differ from your legislation?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is, in fact, the case. The Iowa legislature just last week passed video reform legislation. It's awaiting the governor's signature. My understanding is the governor of Iowa has 30 days to decide whether or not to sign that proposed legislation. It is in many ways similar to the proposed legislation here in that it would require franchising be done at the state level. It does not require a mandatory build-out unless a new entrant gains over 50% market share in an area. It requires that the public access channel requirements and fee requirements are the same as a cable provider. In many ways, it is similar. There is some language in the bill that, quite frankly, I'm not as familiar with that does deal with rights of way and easements and local control issues. As I indicated, there is nothing in the bill as proposed by Senator Sparks that would impair in any way the ability of cities in Minnesota to manage their rights of way. And we could certainly provide to the committee or Senator Sparks a side-by-side comparison of this proposal and the Iowa legislation if it's signed by the governor. We'd be glad to do so.
Well, it might be handy to have when you start meeting with groups to try to work through the controversy.
Absolutely. We will do so.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sharon.
May I take another question? One of the important sources of revenue for local communities to do their local cable channels is through these franchises. And I've heard you say earlier and now that would be part of what you would propose be resolved in the negotiations. But is there something occurring nationally or with the federal regulations that is attempting to subtly, through a series of changes in the law, to eliminate local units of government's access to that revenue to have government channels or education channels? What is it that's happening that threatens municipalities about that source of revenue?
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Senator
Sharon,
I think it's it's fair to characterize the recent FCC order as placing certain limits on revenues that cities can assess or collect for public access purposes. It's attempting to define what constitutes a franchise fee, and as I indicated, I think that's part of the discussion we're going to have in Minnesota. We have laid out or suggested through this proposed legislation some ways that that ought to be defined. I think questions have been raised about whether that's the appropriate definition, but I think that there's no question that most people would observe that the FCC has attempted to limit some of the things that municipalities can collect by tightening that up. And that's the subject of controversy at the federal level as well.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question may be somewhat off the topic, but it will help me understand business models. Quest provides internet broadband. Do you provide it to everyone in the state? How do you decide who gets access to high-speed internet?
Madam Chair and Senator, we do not provide high-speed internet to everyone in our service territory in the state of Minnesota. We have made a substantial improvement in our coverage over the last 3 years. We've gone from 20-some percent of customers within our service territory being able to get high-speed internet broadband services to in the upper 80%. There are still some areas that are more remote, that are more expensive to serve. We do, as I indicated, we are constantly expanding our footprint and that coverage, and we're increasing speeds as well. There was a time in which you could only get 1.5 meg service from Quest. We're now in many areas 3, 5, 7 meg, increasing those speeds as consumer demand grows. And if I were to say what probably the most important variable in terms of deployment decisions that have been made previously, it's around density of population. It's where there are a number of customers that are located near a central office or, you know, other density of population factors. There are more customers that we can potentially serve by making investment there. As I indicated, it's pretty much the same as this video franchising philosophy, which is companies don't have the capital to go on a statewide basis and serve everyone all at once. What you do is you make investment, and you hope people buy your service, and when you start accessing those revenues, you grow from there. It's something we are continuing to do with our high-speed internet product, and it's something we would like to do with our video product. As I indicated also, this technology, internet protocol TV, will necessitate to make it work in order to have your voice service and your high-speed internet and video, multiple video is what most households want these days. In order to make that work over the same connection, we're going to have to invest in a significant amount of fiber deployment into the neighborhood in communities that we serve, and that work will be performed by our employees. I know we have a couple representatives of the Communications Workers of America today. That will be work that they will perform for us and result in significant investment and an expansion of broadband capability in our service territory.
Senator Rummel.
So would it be fair to say that your video would follow the same pattern, that you would go to the most concentrated areas first?
Mr. Stanton.
Madam Chair, Senator, I believe that's a fair assessment. That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions?
I just have one more
question. Senator Sharon.
You've talked a little bit about this. Thank you, Madam Chair. You've talked a little bit about the fact that you shouldn't be held to the same expectations today to build out as to all providers at one time, because it's an unfair expectation relationship to an industry that's built out over a long period of time. In these negotiations that you're proposing, is there an investment that you're making that recognizes that long-term investment that you're wanting to buy into that reaches out to these different communities? Is there anything in your system that causes you to have to pay something to participate in that expenditure that's occurred already?
Madam Chair, Mr. Senator, Stanley. I'm not sure if I'm understanding your question. If what you're asking, are there any technical or other types of difficulties in deploying to everyone in a particular city, is that part of your question?
Senator Sharon.
I may not be completely understanding how the system is going to work, but once you build out to a certain area in the last mile is the most expensive, Is that the you will be building that last mile, or will you be negotiating to use an existing system that's been built out? And then how, if that's the case, if you're negotiating to build an into an existing system,
okay,
how do you accommodate the fact that that investment has been made over a long period of time?
Sure.
It's sort of, I think about it like as a municipal official has a sewer system that a certain group of people have been paying for, and then somebody else wants to hook into it and hasn't paid over a long period of time for the charges to build that system.
Mr. Stanley.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, actually the most expensive part of this in terms of our investment doesn't have to do with the last mile. We'll be using our existing copper structure or infrastructure that goes into the home. The expensive part of this is to lay the fiber that brings higher speeds into the home. And so the cost to us will be to the cost of the fiber, installing the fiber, the electronics that's going to make this technology work, and then there will be, permit fees that we have for municipalities, but those will be minuscule compared to the investment costs from actually laying the fiber and the associated electronics that will make this work. But the technology will be using that existing last-mile infrastructure into the home.
Okay.
It's a way for us, I mean, getting back to the question about the business model, it's a way for us to make investment that is going to allow us to offer voice, high-speed internet, and video services to customers using that infrastructure that was referred to earlier as very expensive that already goes into the home. We have to invest in the fiber to get to the neighborhood, though, to make this technology work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you,
now
Madam
I
Chair.
Have to rescue former Senator Steve Kelly before he falls asleep over here. And I'm going to ask Senator Sparks to take over as the chair. Mr. Chair.
Senator Prittner-Solon.
I have Senate File 1918, and this is really an effort to set policy for the state to bring high-speed internet, to throughout the state of Minnesota and to set up a director within the state and an advisory council. And I've asked former Senator Steve Kelly, who was really the guru on telecommunications here in the state. And when he left, there was quite a void that was left. And so I'm trying to recapture his memory and utilize all his expertise here. So I'm going to let him walk you through the bill and the reason for the need.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you very much. I appreciate Senator Prettner-Solon's inviting me to come and talk about the idea of setting a goal. It may be that I'll be more effective on accomplishing this as an ex-legislator than I was as a legislator, but we'll see what happens. I'll try to talk about, I think one of the big questions here is why act now? I was talking to a former classmate of mine who now teaches at the Harvard, at the Kennedy School of Government. He teaches a class called Acting in Time. And I think that is the issue for the Minnesota legislature and policy-making bodies all over the country, including the United States Congress, is are we going to act in time to provide our citizens with the technological tools that they need to be economically successful, educationally successful, to have access to the healthcare services that are available and will be available in the future over this infrastructure that we are capable of developing. And so, now that I'm at an academic institution as a senior fellow at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, I'd love to try to be as objective as possible, but since the majority of people in the room know that I have a point of view about this. It would be disingenuous to try to tell you that I was purely objective about what I think ought to be done. But there are Minnesota businesses who are coming forward, including some folks who have been supportive of this particular initiative, who have said that a laissez-faire approach to this is no longer adequate, that we need to have a state policy that moves us in a direction that sets a goal and gives guidance to people about the way we're going to get to that goal, and recognizes a multiple set of tools that we can use, and I'll come back to that because I think some of the questions related to earlier bills affect thinking about this. But in addition to the Minnesota businesses like Thompson West and Blue Cross Blue Shield and others who've talked about the benefits of doing this, our Minnesota communities who have been acting over a number of years to say that they're not satisfied with the ad hoc approach to accomplishing these goals. And one of the most recent ones was the city of Windom, which established a fiber to the home project, and they issued municipal bonds in order to accomplish the goal of providing a very high speed broadband infrastructure to their residents. And something I had to learn the hard way is that Minnesota, with respect to telecommunications, is really lumpy. There are places in Minnesota that have competitive, very high-speed video systems and relatively lower prices as a result of the competition and access to a broad range of services. Winona is an example. St. Cloud's an example. Windom will be with the municipal network. And in some cases, rural regional centers are better provided with infrastructure than the metro area, or than what I'll call deep rural or very rural communities. So in some ways, because of the manageable size of regional centers, they can build out an infrastructure and market it to their citizens more easily than folks in the metro area could or in very rural areas. So it's really hard to generalize about how we're going to accomplish this, but we do see cities recognizing the need to move in this direction. Then international competitiveness. The IEEE is the organization of electrical engineers that certifies the standards that are used for developing technology. So, for example, those of you who have Wi-Fi in your laptops, Wi-Fi is a standard certified by the IEEE. And they have, in a paper in 2005, said that it was an issue of America's competitiveness for us to move to having a gigabit standard everywhere in Minnesota, that every citizen ought to have access to a network operating at that speed if we're going to meet the international competition. And again, to use cities as an example, some of you were at the informational session that Senator Pretner-Solon hosted, where representatives of Packet Front provided some information about a Swedish city called Vostros, which is a city of about 100,000 people. And they assigned to their electrical utility the job of building a new network. And it has several interesting lessons about how this can be done. They built a new network in the face of opposition from incumbent providers. And ultimately, the incumbent providers moved to using the higher capacity network because the city made a policy decision not to provide the services but simply to provide the physical network and to let other people, all kinds of providers, provide their services over the network. So one thing to keep in mind is that you can separate the physical network from the provision of services over that network. Now, the model in the United States, And I'd say the dominant model, has been to have things be vertically integrated. The people that own the physical networks also provide the services. And the cable system is a classic example of that. The cable providers are the only entities that provide the services over the network they own. The telephone network is a little bit different because it was envisioned it came, it developed at a time when we were also thinking about other forms of common carriers. And so there was a common carrier tradition in the telephone network that has enabled independent internet service providers to get access to provide service over the telephone company's network. And you heard testimony earlier about how competitive local telephone companies provide services. Many of them provide services over the incumbent company's network. So you're separating out the service provision from the ownership of the physical infrastructure. One of the other reasons to act now is sort of the moribund condition of the United States with respect to other OECD, those are the developed countries around the world, in terms of the progress they've been making. Korea has the advantage of being a more compact and more densely populated community, and it's consistent with what you heard from Mr. Stanek, is that where things are dense, Korea is the very top line, and then you see other, and the United States is the blue squared line, and you see a lot of other states passing, or a lot of other countries passing the United States in broadband penetration right around 2002 through 2003, and so I think this is an issue for United States competitiveness, and given the divided regulation system that we have in the United States between the federal government and the states do have a legitimate role to play in helping to accomplish our goals. Education. This is a single slide from a virtual world that people are, it's a toolbox that researchers are developing that will enable application designers to use this common toolbox to create simulations for educational purposes. It's called Croquet, and the University of Minnesota is one of the co-developers. We just lost one of our best academicians from the University of Minnesota to Duke, who was working on Croquet development. But this needs more bandwidth in order to enable students to participate in these kinds of virtual worlds. And that's one of the reasons that education is going to need this, because we're going to be enabling students to do this from home, not just from the school building. And if we want to extend learning outside the school day, one of the ways we're going to do it is by a greater use of games and simulations that engage students' minds and passions in what they're doing. Healthcare, there are a variety of applications. Now, in fairness, right now the applications for distributing healthcare to individual homes probably is not a high bandwidth issue right now. But at some point, physicians or nurses dealing with people living at home who have chronic conditions are going to want high-quality video interaction with the patient. You can think about one of the biggest challenges in healthcare is getting the patient to actually comply with the treatment regimen. And if somebody is living at home and you can connect with them through interactive video to ensure that they're actually taking the pills that they're supposed to take, it could have a significant increase in the quality of healthcare, particularly in rural areas that are harder for, say, a visiting nurse or other kind of program to reach. And then the other thing to keep in mind with respect to the need to act now is the YouTube phenomenon. Public access channels, public education, government channels are really important. But when you think ahead about what's happening, for example, the Minnesota legislature, the Senate archives Senate hearings and floor sessions. So you don't have to be watching cable TV on the public access channel in order to find out what happened, what happened on a particular bill or what happened at a committee hearing. You can go to an archive of video and look at, watch at your own convenience what's happening. So that is, the PEG channels are important, but what we're moving to is a system where people download this at their own convenience. And then you have independent content creators. The folks who upload stuff to YouTube are doing some amazing things. There was a whole session on National Public Radio about people uploading music lessons and free music lessons available on YouTube for individuals. And as we move to high definition and people wanting to have high quality, the need for bandwidth will expand dramatically, and it'll be bandwidth going to from everybody's house to somebody else's house, not just from a central service provider to large users like schools. The National Governors Association was doing some survey work on innovation, and among the questions they asked was whether having high-speed internet broadband to every student and every American was considered important by the respondents. And you can see that over 50% or more of Americans thought that it was very important, with an additional significant percentage believing that it was somewhat important. So moving in this direction is consistent with what your constituents want to have happen. So as Senator Pretner Solon mentioned, the bill does set a goal, and that is that we achieve availability, not actual customer use, but availability to every customer of a gigabit of service by 2015. And the benefits of that kind of goal setting are very similar to the benefits that the committee talked about with respect to a renewable energy standard, is that you set a goal out there, people know what the goal is, and a variety of people can then begin to think, how do we actually achieve that goal? And that's what the bill is designed to do, is to put together an advisory committee, ask the Public Utilities Commission and Department of Commerce to provide advice about how do we get there. And this bill does not prescribe how to get there. The PUC does have existing responsibility with respect to legislative goals, and those were adopted 8 to 10 years ago, and it's appropriate now to update those goals, and it's time for a new vision about where we ought to go on telecommunications and establish a universal service goal for the 21st century. And there were questions about the challenges with regulating across multiple types of services, and they're certainly there. There's a distinction between intrastate and interstate, and the Minnesota still has the ability to regulate things that are considered intrastate. Where they get into interstate issues, then the Federal Communications Commission and the Congress have put limits on what states can do. One of the issues here is that very high-speed services, because they can handle a variety of service functions, have been identified as information services and therefore are considered to be interstate in character. But those tend to be the services issues. The infrastructure issue can still be within the scope of a state's own actions. And you see that in other places, for example, where cities in Utah undertook a network, cooperative network, to provide the infrastructure. The state was asked by incumbents to step in, and they let the cities go forward with that under some guidance from the state. And so there's still a significant role. And I want to emphasize that your tools as a legislature go beyond regulation. You also have the issue of public property. For example, the whole cable system of franchise fees and regulation is considered to be a trade-off, providing a benefit to the cable company in the form of the use of public right-of-way. In return, the city gets a franchise fee and a provision of service. So we're trading the use of public property for a benefit in the form of service to our constituents. That we also have regulations with respect to the right-of-way as far as telephone companies are concerned, and we limit the extent to which cities can charge the real value of their right-of-way to the telephone companies as a way of providing assistance to the telephone companies in serving customers. So the role of public property as a part of the state interaction with private providers is extremely important. Public purchasing. In the 1990s, one of the tools we used to help expand the high-speed infrastructure in Minnesota was the way we purchased high-speed telecommunication systems for schools. We did it on a distributed basis, and we invited private providers to be part of the solution. That was an incentive for them to expand the capability of their central office infrastructure in order to be able to reach rural schools. So how we buy services as a state or as a public is really important. Public subsidies. We have regulated and provided cash subsidies to service providers to serve certain kind of customers. The cash subsidies operate more at the national level than at the state level, but we've had for a long time a direction to the PUC that they should think about a state-based universal service fund, and this bill asks that we think about the universal service fund concept as a way of addressing the policy goal. And then the third is actual public ownership of the infrastructure, which is the course that Wyndham took and that is happening in other parts of the world. And members should know that there are already, and have been for quite a number of years, a few city-owned telephone companies, and I think there are a couple city-owned cable operations in Minnesota. So some of these concepts are not radical socialism as far as the way Minnesota has tended to work. And there are other examples, long-term basis, of how we've provided telecommunication services using municipal facilities as a way of accomplishing the goal. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to... there's some things here that you're not being asked to decide, and I think that's a good thing. I mentioned the value of open networks in the Vostros example, but we're not asking the legislature to decide that in this bill. There are issues at the federal government level about networks charging some users more than other users. You don't have to get into that. And right now we're not asking you to think about how to pay for it. We're leaving that up to, the bill leaves that up to the advisory board, the state director, the commissioner of commerce to make those recommendations. But there are a variety of ways to think about doing this. For example, in Vostros, for a certain group of customers, they treated it like a sewer access charge, and for $1,200 you in effect bought your connection to the citywide network, put it on your mortgage, and that helped reduce the monthly costs that they had to pay in order to have access to the network. And then we've used revolving loan funds and a similar kind of model for deploying the electrical network earlier. The advisory board can address a variety of issues with the legislature playing the final determining role. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Any questions from committee members? Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, if you were to look at just in a macro scale, what percent of our infrastructure would be obsolete if we would go to something like this?
Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson, that one's really difficult to say. We still have a lot of copper, and in order to accomplish these speeds, most of the copper has to be replaced. Some people might argue that for a really short distance, it's questionable, but maybe from the curb to the house, you could still use the copper infrastructure. But a lot of the copper would have to be replaced. Now, one of the reasons that I say it's complicated, it goes back to Senator Olsen's question about the last mile, because the big trunks tend to have a lot of capacity and are fiber already. in order to handle the capacity. And for the most part, to add capacity, you change the electronics on the end instead of necessarily adding new fiber. So much of the trunk system, the really large-scale system, is there. But when you get out towards the twigs, the ends of the branches out closer to people's homes and businesses, that's where a lot of the replacement of the infrastructure, whether you're a cable company or a telephone company, has been taking place or would have to take place under this proposal.
Thank you. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kelly. Is there any, if we were to move in this direction, is there any estimate of the amount of time this would take to build out the state?
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rummel, I don't think that there's a reliable estimate. And this is a challenging goal, and it's a challenging speed goal. There's no question about that. You could think about setting different goals. For example, this speed goal almost certainly excludes doing this through wireless. And in rural areas, you might be able to hit intermediate levels more easily using very high-speed wireless technologies than by trying to do broadband. But on the other hand, then you start to get some equity issues that I think are really important for the legislature to pay attention to, because wireless can be less reliable depending on the weather, and ultimately wouldn't have the capacity of really high-speed, high-definition, two-way interaction that I think is the sort of the holy grail, the killer application of being able to use this kind of network.
Thank you. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess Senator is it still Senator?
Once a senator, always a senator.
Is that how you'd prefer still? I'm joking.
Senator Vandeveer, I'm comfortable with a lot of forms of address. It happens.
We all get used to that, don't we? I'm looking at, I have a question. That Universal Service Fund, that's in existence now, it looks like. And do they currently have money, or what is that doing today?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Vandeveer, we have had in place for a long time an authorization to the Public Utilities Commission to develop a state-based universal service fund. But to the best of my knowledge, they have not acted on that. And so we don't have a specific charge or a specific distribution for universal service. We have accomplished that goal through regulatory means. And one of the challenges that competition brings is that some of those regulatory techniques are less useful. So for example, Quest provides services both in rural areas and in the Twin Cities metro area. So we've told Quest, as a state policy, that they can't charge a different amount for a customer in the rural area compared to a customer in the metro area, can't charge a different amount to somebody living in an apartment building right next to the central office who is really cheap to serve because the distance is short and they're in a very dense environment, compared to somebody who lives at the end of a rural county, you know, or township road who is very expensive to serve. Quest has to charge everybody the same amount. So that averaging acts as a subsidy to high-cost customers for their service. We've also had a system of subsidy that support universal service where we've charged business customers a higher rate and permitted the telephone companies to do that in order to provide a more affordable service to residential customers. And then the third method we've used, and this has become even less and less viable over time as a result of the internet and competition, is that we've enabled companies to charge higher rates for long distance, and that was used to subsidize local service costs. And that's called an access fee in some places. So so as long as we've had those hidden subsidy methods of supporting universal service, I think the Public Utilities Commission has not tackled the issue of an explicit charge and an explicit payment for universal service purposes.
Senator Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kelly, do you envision using this fund to pay this advisory board, or is this going to be voluntary? Or,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandiver, in order to keep the bill simple for purposes of getting the discussion going this year, it did not address compensation of the board. I think for practical purposes, you'd get plenty of participation without having to set up a per diem or things like that. And I think the governor in appointing the state director would have to address the staffing to the board in terms of who from a state agency would support the work of the board.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Kelly, you anticipate probably this advisory board going away after these are established, or do you see this as ongoing? Or
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandiver, I think it might have a role through the establishment of the policy solutions to getting towards the goal. And then I really think it's up to the legislature to what extent you want ongoing advice from this advisory board. The Public Utilities Commission and the department have been engaged in this debate and providing advice to the legislature over the years that I served. The advice from the department changes with the governor, and the Public Utilities Commission has to be careful about how they try to act as a whole commission, because they also play a quasi-judicial role with respect to deciding disputes. So one of the advantages of this advisory board is that presumably over time, if the legislature kept it in place, you'd have some continuity of advice and strategy supporting the legislature's decisions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. It was a good discussion. Senator Pretner-Solon, do you just want to lay Senate Bill 1980 on the table then?
Mr. Chair, that would be the intention, that we would work on it in the interim.
Good. Thank you for your presentation, Senator Kelly. You can come back here.
That does bring us to the end of our agenda, and we have no further items before this committee this year. I do know that there are two commissioners that need to be appointed, but they have not been forwarded to us by the governor, and so I don't anticipate any further meetings this year. So unless something unforeseen happens, I expect to see you all next year. Thank you very much for your attention. You've been great at attending meetings. I appreciate it. You've had wonderful comments and discussions, and I think that the involvement of the committee has helped us to be a good committee, as a committee that has forwarded good policy to the floor. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.